Hello, this is Eddie Duke. Welcome to the weekly podcast at Panther Creek Baptist Church. You know, Jesus Christ is an amazing person. As I look at our culture today, I'm convinced the absolute only hope for this world in which we live is Jesus Christ. And every week, I will introduce you to messages that will communicate this hope that we have in Christ. I'm thankful that you've taken the time to catch us here this week. It means a lot to me that you would tune in, and I would love to hear from you. And now, here is this week's broadcast.
All right, after looking at this, after looking at Revelation chapter 20, we looked at the last time we were together, we talked about Revelation 19. I told you how I love Revelation 19. I love that chapter because, again, we see joy. And we finally, all through the tribulation and through all the hard things, and so we see a lot of joy there in Revelation 19. But as I was going through Revelation 20, I realized that it's probably best served in bite-sized portions. I had 10 pages of notes tonight just on Revelation 20, and the more I went over it, the more I really was getting bogged down myself. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to split this up into Snicker snack-sized portions, if you don't mind, so we don't have to eat the whole candy bar tonight. So we're going to look at the first three verses of Revelation chapter 20, but let me do a quick review before we move on. Revelation is divided up into three sections. And the reason why we know that is because Revelation 1:19 tells us, and this is what it says, Jesus is talking to John and he says, okay, I need you to write what you have seen. You know, write what is in the past. And Revelation chapter 1 is exactly that. It is what John saw that's in the past. And then he said, write what is. Write what is, you know, what is. And that's the present. That's where we are right now. And Revelation chapters 2 and 3 talk about where we are right now. Because when Jesus was crucified, buried, and he rose again, it entered into the age of grace, the church age. And Revelation chapters 2 and 3 talk about the seven churches of Asia. You know, each one of those relate to churches throughout all history. It relates to churches that we have today. So that is where we are today. Revelation chapters 2 and 3 are talking about the present time, where we are. And then Revelation chapter 4, verse 1 begins the future, because Jesus said the last section of Revelation is what will be, what is to come. And so that's what we're looking at in the future. And Revelation 4 to the end of the chapter is all about the future. And that's really where we've been, and that's what we've been talking about. Since we started this, I remember I think it was the funeral of your sister in Indiana, was it not? And I remember when we drove up to that, I can't remember who I went with now, but that's been several years ago that we went and did that. And I remember going down this road, and we passed several churches, and one church that we passed had a sign. And this is what the sign said. It said, independent, fundamental, pre-tribulation, pre-millennial, dispensational church. Now that's a mouthful, you know. And there's some words in there that really caught my attention. One was that pre-trib, you know, pre-tribulation. And really what that means is that we believe, this church is believing, that we will not go through the tribulation, you know, that the church will be raptured like we've talked about here, like we've seen in the Bible. I agree with that stance, as a matter of fact, that we've seen that, yeah, the church will be taken out before we get there. But then there was something called premillennial, and that's what I want us to look at tonight. And I told you when we first started this that one of the things that I struggle with the most when it comes to the book of Revelation is this millennium time. Now, millennium comes from two Latin words, the word milla, which means thousand, and the word annum, which means years. So 1,000 years, it means exactly what you would think it would mean. So there's going to be 1,000-year reign. And one of the reasons why I struggle with that is because Revelation really doesn't talk about it that much. As a matter of fact, two verses are devoted to the millennium reign, and that's about it. We don't know a lot of what's going to take place in there. We know some things, but not really a lot. So we're going to look at that. Again, we're going to do one small bite-sized portion tonight and a couple in the coming weeks. And my goal is still to finish up Revelation probably by the end of September. But when we talk about the end times, when we talk about prophecy, at seminary, there is a class devoted to this. If you were to go to seminary today and say, I want to learn and I want to take a class, I want to sign up for a class devoted to prophecy and end times, they would put you in what is known as a study of eschatology. Eschatology, that is the study of the end times, the study of prophecy. And there's three viewpoints of eschatology. The first one is known as amillennial. Amillennial. Now, ah, anytime you put a or ah in front of a word, it just completely makes that word the opposite of what it first meant. Like, for instance, muse means to think. If I say amuse, if I add an A to muse, it means to not think. So if Lisa and I, if I go home tonight and I watch a movie, and at the end of that movie I say, you know what, Lisa, that was a very amusing movie. That will mean that it wasn't a movie I had to think very much about. I didn't have to try to figure out the plot. It was just an amusing movie that I could enjoy that I didn't have to think of. So that's what ah means. And so that's what amillennial means. People who follow the amillennial theology or eschatology, they believe that this is all figurative. This is all not literal. It's not going to happen ever. It's not going to take place. So that's amillennial. There are schools that teach this. Harvard Divinity School teaches it. Duke Divinity School. There's Union Theological Seminary that teaches this. So there are some schools that teach this thought, but there's not a lot that practice this or really understand this enough to say that it's, you know, that it's kind of figurative and it's not really ever going to happen. There is something else known as postmillennial. And postmillennial was very popular at the beginning of the 20th century. George Truett, the famous pastor from First Baptist Dallas that served there for many years, he was a postmillennialist. Henry Ward Beecher was a person who believed in postmillennial. And here's what postmillennial believed. It kind of followed a philosophy that entered the golden age of the 20th century. When that century first began, there was a golden age. This is what they believe. They believe that God is going to usher in, before the tribulation, a time of peace. There'll be no conflict. Everybody will be getting along. There'll be the roaring 20s. It'll be just joyous. Everybody will have a good time. And for a while, it seemed like that was going to be because we had prohibition, you know, and people were coming back to church and there was no alcohol. And people said, okay, that's why, you know, Henry Ward Beecher, that's why he said, hey, this is we're here. We're in the post-millennial right now, this 1,000 years before the church is taken out. But the problem with that was World War I. World War I began to end that thinking, and then when World War II happened, and now we arrive today, and it seems like things are not getting better. Things are getting worse and worse. Very few people propose that post-millennial is the way to go because we just don't see that it's very peaceful. That brings us to the last one that we see here tonight that I wanted to talk about, and that is premillennial. And if you hadn't figured it out by now, I probably fall into that category. And I tell you what, the more I study Revelation, the more we have times like this, the more I really believe that it's going to happen. This is really what the Bible's talking about when we look at it. And that's the belief. Billy Graham followed this way of thinking. D.L. Moody followed this. Chuck Swindoll today follows this way of thinking. And it's a belief that what we're reading here right now is it. That we are going to go through a time when the church is raptured. Then we're going to go through that tribulation time. There's going to be the Battle of Armageddon. And after the Battle of Armageddon, we're going to usher in this 1,000 year of reign where Jesus is going to reign on the earth. And all of us are going to be here living at this time, serving Him. Now, we're going to talk next week about why we're going to, why I believe that that's the case. We're going to look at that more. But tonight, I want us to look at verses 1 through 3. You're beginning to see, I think, why I wanted to split this up into some easier sized portions. But verses 1 through 3 says, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key to the abyss and a great chain in his hand." Now, we've talked about angels and their names before. There's Michael, there's Gabriel. This is not them. This is not even a mighty angel. This is a normal angel that is coming down with a chain in his hand. And verse 2 says, "He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years." He threw him into the abyss, closed it, and put a seal on it so that he would no longer deceive the nations until the 1,000 years were completed. After that, he must be released for a short time. If you can, turn in your Bibles to Isaiah 14. I should have had you do this before we started. But before I read Isaiah 14, I want to drop down to verse 10, because verse 10 says, "The devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever." So again, we see that this millennial reign will be when Satan is bound for this 1,000 years. He'll be released. We're going to talk about this more next week. He'll be released, and again, he'll be put down and thrown in the lake of fire for 1,000 years. But as we read this, this is the devil. This is Satan. When we talked in Sunday school class today, in my Sunday school class, we said we can never lose sight of who our real enemy is. I told our Sunday school class, my enemy is not Lisa. My enemy, people that I may have conflict with or people that I may have a disagreement with, our enemy is not each other. Our enemy is not people. Our enemy is Satan. You know, and we have to identify who the real enemy is. Well, and if we ever wanted to know, we've heard stories about how Satan started and that he fell from heaven. You know, he wanted to be like God and he fell from heaven. Well, Isaiah 14 actually describes this. And Isaiah 14 says this in verse 12. It says, "Shining morning star," which means Lucifer. That's describing Lucifer. "How you have fallen from the heavens, you destroyer of nations, you have been cut down to the ground. You said to yourself, I will ascend to the heavens. I will sit on my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the God's assembly in the remotest parts of the north. I will ascend above the highest clouds. I will make myself like the Most High." I want to read another verse here, beginning in verse 16. Verse 16 says, "Those who see you will stare at you. They will look closely at you. Is this the man who caused the earth to tremble, who shook the kingdoms, who turned the world into a wilderness, who destroyed its cities and would not release the prisoners to return home?" One of the things that we've seen as we've gone through this study in Revelation is this is how Satan operates. Satan wants to be worshipped as God is worshipped. All through the book of Revelation, we see a lot of similarities between what God does and what Satan is trying to do. He's always, as a matter of fact, in verse 14, you saw a lot of eyes. He says, "I will ascend. I will become greater. I will become this. I will become that." Isn't that interesting that that's exactly the opposite of how God is? There's a spiritual principle that we need to understand, and that's this. And we see it in Philippians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. The spiritual principle that we need to understand from God is this. The way up is down, and the way down is up. Did you catch that? The way up is down, and the way down is up. Let me read to you, if I can explain this better, in Philippians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. It says, this is, what does it say about Jesus? It says, "Jesus, being in the form of God, didn't think it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and humbled himself and became as a servant. Do you see the difference? While the whole time Satan is saying, "I'm going up," God says, "You're going down. And one day you will be cast down." And while Jesus says, "I'm not going to make myself God, I'm not going to be on that same level," he was risen up while he said he was going down. And so that is the spiritual principle. You know, when it comes to Satan, I believe we make two mistakes as Christians. First of all, I believe sometimes we underestimate him. I believe sometimes we may think to ourselves, you know what, I got this, it's all going to be good, and we don't really see ourselves vulnerable in what Satan is wanting to do. I think there are times that we underestimate him, but the greatest mistake I think we are as Christians is I think we overestimate him. And I think a lot of times we think that we just can't do anything, and sure enough, Satan is powerful, but we are more. And this is how God works. God says that we have the authority in Jesus' name to stop anything that Satan wants to do. The best way I can think of to understand it, and I'll close with this here tonight, the best way I can think of to understand it is this. If you have a state trooper that is my size, that is not very big, not very intimidating, not able to do much, and you have a state trooper out on the bypass, and this state trooper is called out there to direct traffic, and he has an 18-wheeler that is bearing down, that is just coming, and he steps out there and holds up his hand, do you think physically, it's a ridiculous question, isn't it, that that state trooper is going to be able to stop that 18-wheeler just by putting up his hand if the 18-wheeler does not want to stop? No, he's just going to roll right over him. But why would that 18-wheeler stop? Why would the driver stop if it sees a trooper out there holding up his hand, directing people to stop? Because that 18-wheeler, the driver is going to be responding to the authority that that trooper has standing on the bypass. That authority is by the law, by the badge that that trooper's wearing, by the uniform that that trooper's wearing. You and I stand in the face of what Satan wants to do under the authority of Jesus Christ. We can't overestimate what Satan wants to do when it comes to dealing with our lives. Don't ever overestimate what he has. We have the authority to stand against his power and all the things that he wants to do.
Hey, this is Eddie Duke, pastor at Panther Creek Baptist Church. I hope this message was a blessing for you today. I want to let you know that we here at Panther Creek are a small church that are looking to make a big impact on our neighbors in our community with the love of Christ. If you're looking for a church home with which to serve and connect with, we would love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 for Sunday school and 10:30 for church. We'd also love to have you join us on Sunday evenings at 6:30, but if you can't join us, we hope you'll tune in every week and listen to us. Have a fantastic day.